Well, hello. You are listening to the BrianMadden.com podcast. We're recording on Friday, March 29th here at the BrianMadden.com studios in Tech Target West in San Francisco. And my guest today is Kevin Goodman.
Hello, Jack. How are you?
I'm very good. So this is an exciting time. So Kevin is, of course, recently retired, I suppose. And with that goes his brand new retirement beard.
Aha, you like that? You know, had to do the same thing that Brian did when he retired, only his was a lot darker than mine. A lot of gray in my beard.
It's very distinctive.
Hmm.
Well, so we're recording this on Friday. On Tuesday or earlier this week, you joined us at BrianMadden.com for a freelance contribution, our litmus test for freelance contributors is that they have to be independent and not working for a vendor. And back at the iGEL conference, I saw you and I heard your presentation on what you need to know about Windows Virtual Desktop. And that was your presentation as an independent person. And I said, well, this is great content. We need to have this at BrianMadden.com. So thanks to you for actually returning to the pages of BrianMadden.com, because there were some other posts there. If you click on it, it goes back to the days, after VMware and before FS Logix.
That's right. My post VMware days, I did a couple of blogs for you. And let me tell you, it does feel wonderful to be able to say what I really think. Other than that time down at the user group meeting in Florida where they pumped me up with beer, I haven't really been able to tell you what I really think about it, because it wouldn't be appropriate being, representing FS Logix and, having to keep a nice face for that company. I really wasn't free to give you my opinions about other companies or other technologies.
Yeah. And so let's back up a second. So obviously our audience here, they all are familiar with FS Logix. FS Logix came out of stealth mode at Briform. What year was that?
Was that 14? 2014, maybe? That's it. I'm thinking, yeah.
Right. And then up until the acquisition in November. So that's a little over 5 years. But since November, also one more thing, of course, here on air, I should say congratulations on the acquisition.
Well, thank you very much. I was a Microsoft employee until January 6th of 2019 of this year. So, and that was, they have something called Microsoft Day, and Microsoft Day was Monday, January 7th, where all those people switched over to be Microsoft employees. Until then, we were on the old FS Logix payroll system and all of that stuff. So I actually left the day we DocuSigned all the documents and never went back, but I still got checks from them until January 6th. I'm doing air quotes now, people, transitioning. So, yeah, so I've been gone since Thanksgiving.
And so how have you been filling your retirement time?
Yeah, so I do have a non-compete with FS Logix that we signed as part of the acquisitions, 2 years long from that November date. And so I'm kind of out of the optimizing remote desktops business for a while. But I got the non-compete written in such a way that I competition was described as anything that I had documented in a PowerPoint or talked about publicly or applied for a patent before. By the way, I'm the only one at FS Logix whose name's on all of the patents. So if it's really, really successful at Microsoft, just remember that. But going forward, there were three patents I didn't get around to writing and a whole system that was going to be next. That I didn't get around to implementing because of the Microsoft acquisition. So I haven't really thought about that since November. Instead, I've been spending my time, I joined the board of a charity, just to keep busy. It's a group that told me they could use some executive leadership, and it's a worthy cause, and that is something to keep my time going. Of course, I did speak at the IGEL conference. Ever since Bryform left, I've been hoping there'd be a conference that would take his place. It's interesting. This is Friday. Online is the ZenApp, the virtual expo, ZenApp blog virtual expo that Tron does. That's great online, but there needed to be something in person, and that was Disrupt EUC with the IGEL. So I went and I spoke at that. The other thing I've been doing is a lot of people who know me call me and say, I've got an idea for a startup, Kevin. Could you help me raise money and help me with my pitch deck and just give me your own 2 cents worth on my idea? And if you've ever worked for me or I know you and consider you a really good friend, I'd do that for free. If I don't know you and several people have come up to me who I didn't really know and ask for that same thing, I charge him a fee for that. So I wrote a blog. So I'm about to change my Twitter handle to Blogger, baby.
Oh, cool. Yeah, and we can get you some more blogs after that to follow up. But last week was a pretty busy week in our desktop virtualization world with all of the news that came out of Ignite on the Road event there in Amsterdam. Let's do one of them first. So, of course, the news was that FS Logic's licenses and technology is now free to pretty much anyone ever that's licensed to use almost any form of virtual desktop. So, honestly, I had been... I was assuming that they might use it as some sort of hook to get people into Windows Virtual Desktop, or at least running their desktops on Azure. But the reaction from the community has been lots of excitement. Hey, this is a community and industry friendly move. I know a lot of people are excited to get their hands on it. So that has to feel pretty good.
Credit goes to the FS Logic's engineering team and the architects who put that together, and all the hard work that both the sales and marketing did, so that pretty much that's the de facto of how you should be doing user profile management right now. And the fact that it comes from Microsoft now, profile management, in my mind, is closed. Maybe in a couple of years, somebody will think of something new to but right now, it's done. It is good news to all those people who want to use it. Maybe not uncomfortable news for all those people who paid money for it. And since in Q4 and in Q1, I saw some. I might have even started it, a little kerfuffle up on Twitter by asking for a refund for asking for a friend. But maybe it'll come in the form of Azure credits or something like that. But keep in mind, it's not shipping yet. So FS Logic's technically from Microsoft, is not shipping yet. I don't know where you can get the bits from if you want to get it downloaded. Now I have no idea. Please don't ask me. Yeah. I have no idea where to get those bits from. But when it's shipping, maybe they'll do something for those people who purchased previously.
Yeah, there were a few notes on Twitter. Randy tweeted, or whoever is running the FS Logic's Twitter account these days. Is that Gabe? Is that somebody else? But anyway, they
Brandon?
Tweet.
I don't know.
they tweeted that if you're interested for right now to. Go to the FS Logic site and use their contact sales form. And Randy also mentioned on Twitter that essentially, to answer the question, I think that was originally posed by Claudio, was that essentially FS Logic becomes UPD 2.0, and UPD will eventually get removed from the OS. So this will be it going forward.
Hey, and... props have to go out to the original UPD guy, who he is. There's a gentleman at Microsoft right now going, you know what? I invented this stuff. All Randy and team did was, make it accessible for the masses. But this is a natural replacement for that. And UPT 2.0 is always what I thought it would be called. I'm curious. I don't know. Honestly, I didn't even know there was a UPD when that first started. But I don't know. Is UPD ship with the OS or is it a separate download? I understand FS Logic can be a separate download and won't ship with the Windows 10 bits. So
I think it ships with the OS, but I'm not when we get to that level of detail, you know, since Gabe went from RyanMadden.com over to FS Logics a little over a year ago, suddenly it became my responsibility here at BrianMadden.com to cover a lot more of the details of the desktop virtualization side of the house. And you know, I had some good teachers working with Brian and Gabe over the years and having a front row seat, but there were definitely some details that I had to catch up on.
So everyone, if you can look at the live feed, Jack is staring daggers at me now for hiring Gabe away because he did such a great job on that. And while you mentioned it, I'll bring it up to all those people calling me, asking me how to get a good startup. I'll tell you how to get it. Go out and find the best people. Surround yourself with people smarter than you are, and you will be able to succeed if you have a good product that people need. And yeah, Gabe was certainly a huge part of that. I'm sitting here in the Tech Target offices inside their studio, and I remember seeing pictures of Brian and Gabe, or at least Brian in here, Gabe remoting in from Omaha. So it brings back some great memories.
Yeah, this is the studio that we have the bobbleheads from the 10-time Rive Forum speakers on the wall, and the Homer Simpson car that we sometimes use to describe vendor products that get a few too many extra features. And some old Briform posters. So we may be doing a little bit of reminiscing this evening after we wrap up the recording.
Oh yeah, and so you just stuck a dagger in my heart there because I'm not one of those bobbleheads. 2005 maybe was the first Briform, I'm guessing.
That's correct.
And the reason I say that is I just got promoted. I was VP of development for RTO software back then, and got promoted to CEO. And told myself I was too busy to submit a session for that very first Briform. So, and it was all the way up until one of the London ones when I was at VMware that I had made all of them. So when the 10-year came, I had only missed one of them and missed my shot at immortality by that much. Ouch. Of course, I don't know if I could look as good as the guys that they're over Jack's shoulder right now. Benny, your own, Ron Oglesby, Brian, and Tim Mangan there all look fantastic. So congratulations to you guys.
Hey, we should have a 10 times speaker award or something, because we've had 20 of them over the years. But if you get to the group of speakers that have spoken, you know, 10 plus times or a dozen or 15 times, that becomes a pretty cool group.
You know, that's kind of like that Saturday Night Live once you've hosted five.
Oh, yeah, the one with
Steve Martin.
And Tom Hanks. And, yeah.
They're sitting around in smoking jackets and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, you get your red jacket for presenting at 10 Briforms or something like that. I don't know where the whoever's out there and wants to like sponsor this, and I don't think any actual benefits would come from sponsoring it, but
hey, you know what? Maybe we can talk to the guys at iGel. It's a nice throwback thing. They ought to have them all on their stage for the next Disrupt, which is just a fantastic conference, by the way. I don't get any remuneration from them or anything else like that. It's just trying to fill a void that the Briforms filled for such a long time.
Right. And absolutely, I was there as well, and I was only able to be there for one day when it was down in the South Bay this year. But it was a day packed with seeing familiar faces and learning a lot of new things. Anyway, this reminiscing, we could
one other item we want to take up all the podcast, but another one fill in the void is Steve Greenberg and his master's retreat. Are you going to that this year?
I am not able to make it out that weekend. That's a difficult weekend for me. But I've heard lots of really great things about that as well.
It's a fantastic tournament. And so let's tell a quick story about Steve. By the way, Brian Madden, the person, I've heard him talk about Kevin Goodman. He goes, you know, if you scratch your elbow, it reminds Kevin of a story. So be careful. But when Steve first did it, he did it when the Masters golf tournament, it was that weekend. And he asked me if I'd go to it, and I was thinking, oh, man, I want to watch the Masters. And he said, what are you talking about? And I told him, you called this the Masters retreat because it's on Masters weekend. And he goes, oh, I was thinking it was like Jedi Masters. I'm not into golf. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm wrong there. But it is another great unconference, as they call it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, for years I've been looking for the same thing in the enterprise mobility space, and for a while here's now you've reminded me of a story to tell. So for a while, the premier enterprise mobility conference to go to was AirWatch Connect. Now, it wasn't a vendor-neutral conference, so you weren't going to see sessions from Citrix or MobileIron there, obviously. So take that for what it's worth. But this was the one place where you could go and be at a conference with 800 people that they all know what MDM is. and then, of course, AirWatch Connect got folded into VMworld, and I even probably a year ago wrote an article saying, like, hey, VMworld is not adequately serving the needs of the former AirWatch Connect crowd, because it's EUC at VMworld. We're lost in all of the other stuff, and it's more difficult for attendees and for sponsors that, you know, want to know that the people walking by their booth is someone that's actually interested in their products. So if anybody from VMware is listening, that call for, like, you got to break off a special workspace one zone or something.
What a great idea. That's a fantastic idea. I don't care if it's just one hall, the 700 hallway, in all of VMware. Just concentrate them kind of like the car dealerships of doing. Have you seen the auto mall concept? You know, I'm going to buy a car, so let's go to all of – I'm interested in EUC. I have presented – FS Logix bought a booth at VMware before, and we're next to the guy that he wants to help you fight your VM sprawl, and another guy who's doing vSphere monitoring, and you'd give your pitch, and the guy says, actually, I'm looking for backup. Thanks. So, I don't have any virtual desktops. So that would be great if they concentrated them all. Or if they're at Moscone, just do that one building at Moscone. I'm all for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, they are back in San Francisco this year. If all of VMworld is at Moscone North and South, like, put all the Workspace ONE sessions and vendors and everything over in Moscone West.
Yeah.
I mean, we put on a conference with 500 people, so I'm sure putting on a conference with 20,000 people can't be that much harder.
Yeah, no, not at all. And as a matter of fact, it grows every year, so they must be doing something wrong, and they need to do a course correction immediately, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, that's my... That's one of my soapboxes. Now to the news that we got from Windows Virtual Desktop and your article. So the other news that we got, what is this? All of 8 days ago was the public preview of Windows Virtual Desktop became available, and one of the questions that I had after seeing all the news come out on Twitter is, did we actually learn any new facts about how Windows Virtual Desktop is allowed to be licensed or used, or features and functionality? And I think I can think of one main thing that I net new that I learned about Windows Virtual Desktop within the last week, and this is regard to usage of Windows 10 multi-user. Although I also see them calling it multi-session, so maybe I need to go back and correct things, but we've been calling it multi-user for a year now.
Yeah, I think it says multi-session in the about, doesn't it, though? But yeah, whichever. Brian, that's one thing I love about your audience. They're smart enough to know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So when WVD was announced in September at Ignite, one of the questions was, so this new Windows 10 multi-user, where are you going to be allowed to use it? And the word, and I specifically wrote to Microsoft PR to ask about this, and the word that was that Windows 10 multi-user will only be for usage of Windows Virtual Desktop. So the new thing that I learned in the last week is that CSPs and specifically Citrix will be able to use Windows 10 multi-user. It still has to be on top of Azure, but they'll be able to use it on their own. You know, put your own VDA in it, and then deliver it just like any other Citrix workload, except it happens to be the multi-user SKU. Now, does that extend to other CSPs? I'm assuming that it will. I don't and haven't found a definitive answer to that yet. Or will it? So that one, I'm assuming that it will be extended to other CSPs. But will it be extended to non-cloud solution providers or on-premises usage, or anybody uses it however they want? I've seen no indications so far that type of usage will be allowed.
So let's look at that from both angles. If it is, and other cloud brokers are allowed to use it, some of the ways you purchase for these cloud brokers is you buy a desktop per user per month. It's not an hourly thing. WVD, it's a bring your own VM. So if I have a cloud broker in front of it, and they're charging me by the month, I actually don't care whether it's multi-session or not. Multi-session helps the guy who's paying for the resources, right? That's part of why we've always used RDSH on one of the server mode operating systems, right? To get more users on there and get the cost, you know, the TCO down. But if I'm getting a fixed cost for, let's take another cloud vendor like Amazon and Workspaces. I pay Workspaces by the month. I actually, out of curiosity, looked, and it's 2016 data center. What do I care? I really don't care, because I'm paying by the month on that, you know, and I can spin up all the RAM usage I want, and I don't have to worry about it. If I'm trying to do my own implementation, though, I just, I've got an on-premises solution. I know what I'm doing for my corporation. I've pitched Azure for the future, and then I'm really going to be interested in it.
And this is also assuming that you want the full Windows 10 desktop experience, which you can't get with Server 2019 because there are all sorts of Windows 10 features, including support for Office 365 Pro Plus, that you won't be able to get with Server 2019. So then you need to have either VDI with with standard Windows client, or multi-user Windows 10 if you're allowed to put that on your own.
Yeah, exactly. Let's examine that a little bit. So I'm, again, I don't want to pick on Amazon or, you know, use any of your other ones, but it's the most one I can think of. Amazon, using 2016 server, I'm really using it like a user per user operating system. I'm not using it in server mode. I'm just remoting into it. So one of the problems that FSLogix fixed was the fact that if you don't have local storage, your Office 365 suffers. Outlook requiring a OST file, OneDrive requiring local storage would suffer. But if I'm on let's say I'm on 2016 and I've got locally attached storage and I'm just using it, those products would continue to work on there. But if I'm in RDSH mode and I have to have it more than one server, and I have to get into a situation where I may have to load balance or stuff like that, then they have to be stored on network drives. And if they're stored on network drives, that's when all of Office 365 breaks down for the user. So I could see why you'd want to put that in with FSLogix. You'd want to put that over on. But I can also see why you want Office 365 not to be supported there.
But you'll have and those users also, to clarify, since they'll have RDS cals for those 2016 server machines, and so they'll be entitled to use FSLogix.
Yeah. So think about it. All right. So I'm. And I haven't coded in a long time, so I'm not an engineer anymore. I have an engineering mind like that, but I think like an executive now, and I can't get the thoughts out of there. If I'm Microsoft, I'm in a death match with all the other cloud vendors to get you to spin up, and I know there are these guys that sit in front of it that says, oh, I'll allow you to move from one cloud to the other. It's like voting right. In the United States. We vote the incumbent in. It's too difficult to change. We're not going to do it. If they get all your workloads on Azure, it's going to take a total outage for you to want to move. And that's what they're going for. And if you're one of those other vendors and you want to sue them over the fact they won't let Office 365 work in single user mode on 2019, go ahead. By 2 years later, when we admit you're right and we give you some money, we've gotten all the workloads over here and they're not going to migrate.
Well, also, in 2019 or 2020 or going forward, really, what is the overhead of just doing VDI instead? I mean, and VDI in the cloud. I mean, and well, I should say, like, you know, client OS instead of single user servers.
Right. Yeah. So I mean,
I guess obviously if you're doing it through a CSP that's running it on Azure, that's one thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it depends on who's paying for those VMs. That's when it's important, right? So if you're going through Citrix Cloud or somebody else like CloudJumper or one of those guys, if you're going through them and they're charging you a flat monthly fee, what do you care what it is in the background? I guess you want the true Office, Windows 10 experience, and you want the full Office experience as opposed to the 2019 perpetual, which is a subset of features. If you get that full experience and you're paying monthly for that usage, what do you care about the resources? If you own the VM, so whether you're Citrix Cloud or you're a customer who's decided I don't need to pay Citrix, I'm just going to go up there and I'll use the WVD client access, you know, the protocol to get their clients, then you're very concerned about it. And I think you'll see over time, Windows 10 isn't going to have the same support load on it resource-wise that Windows 2016 or 19 has in RDSH mode. But you get the ability to have multiple of them, the VMs up there. So I think they'll continue to get tweaked over time, and just as anybody else that's starting on the same foot, this will also enable, of course, I'm out of the faster horse game, but I could see a lot of other people filling gaps there that saying, oh, we can increase the scalability of Windows 10 multi-session. We can save you money in the cloud, buy our software, or Microsoft themselves will do it over a period of time.
Okay, so there's a lot in there that you just mentioned, but one thing that we should unwrap that you were mentioning earlier is the faster horse game. And so a lot of this, like where you want your Windows apps to be running and who you want to be running them for, a lot of this depends on what are your use cases for Windows apps and desktops going forward. And in some regard, like, should Windows middleware for Windows apps be more like a PaaS or SaaS thing? Although that sort of breaks down, like if your Windows client app workloads like absolutely have to be right next to their workload, and the workload is in another cloud, then you care about where they are.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there are a lot of things remote desktops are good for. And one of them that you just mentioned, where I want to have my data right next to my application, they're really good for that. There's a lot of things they're not good for. When we first started out, and again, being independent, I can talk about all this stuff, right? I mentioned that the mission of FS Logix when we were doing this, make remote desktops suck less. I never would have said that to a customer. Hi, what do you guys do? Hey, we make remote desktops. Because they would have asked, why do they suck? And I would have told them. And if they realized the daunting task they would have just to try to get feature parity with physical desktops, they might not have gone to remote desktops, or they might have migrated off. And hence then, I don't get a chance to sell software. But when you're talking about a faster horse on there, the of course, a reference to Henry Ford, hey, if you had gotten what your customers had wanted, I would have built a faster horse instead of the Model T, right? We know that whole story. And that's what FS Logix did, right? They made remote desktops, or in this case, Office 365, better. We optimized them and stuff like that.
Ointment for the horse's knees, or
horseshoes. It's perfect optimization to make your horse faster. Look at these better horseshoes I've created. But if you think about it, somebody should have stepped back a long time ago and said, "Do we really still need a horse? Users need their applications out there. Should we just figure out a better way? Should we be optimizing Intune instead and get a better way to get the applications down to their physical desktops?"
Well, funny you should ask this question, because 2011, I joined BrianMadden.com full time. I had done some work with him before. And what had happened in 2010? The iPad had come out, and that's when Brian and Gabe said, "Hey, we keep on getting all these pitches about what to do about these darn pesky BYOD iPads. So why don't you go figure that out? So from then, my mandate sort of became like, while BrianMadden.com was the desktop virtualization covering website, now that I'm like, oh, I'm covering this mobility stuff, which turned into SaaS apps and identity and Chromebooks and Android and all of that. So I became less of a desktop virtualization person, and I define my mandate as EUC delivering apps and data in whatever form it is. So here's an interesting question. In the 5 years since FS Logix began, just think about that's like five more years advancement of web apps and SaaS apps and mobile clients for those and web clients for those.
And 5 years more advanced for physical devices as well. And you are literally the guy who wrote the book on it. And so you know as well as anyone, the 5 years of that mobile device management and five more years of application delivery out to physical devices, is those guys are all creating faster horses as well, except their horses are over on the physical side.
Right. And I could sit here all day and talk about all of the issues in, you know, the speeds and feeds of what's going on in mobility management and identity management and SaaS apps and stuff, but there are a few ways that I see this effect coming up. One is, so I know you've seen it, and I retweeted it before. Brian Madden, the person, my brother, not Brian Madden, the site. He recently put on this Lightboard. It's Lightboard, not Whiteboard video. It's actually some pretty cool technology where he's explaining the concept behind Workspace ONE, but it's not a Workspace ONE thing. It's really how we've been envisioning the future of end user computing for as long as I've been writing here at brianmedden.com. And I think actually probably the most visionary person that we can credit to really identifying this idea was probably Noah Wasmer with Project Horizon. Was it 2009 or 2010?
Nine or 10. The original Horizon, I was at VMware at the time, the original Horizon was that identity manager for all your SaaS apps, and I use that. It was fantastic. You log in one time, one password in your Active Directory, and it worked for all your SaaS apps. So your Salesforce, your Oracle Financials we used back then to submit expenses stuff. It worked for all of that stuff. And then when someone left the company and they offboarded them, if that's the right term, then immediately they weren't able to use their WebEx or any of those other things like that. And that was the gist of it. And now it's evolved into Workspace ONE. And I'm somewhat familiar. AirWatch from Atlanta, by the way. Shout out to Atlanta, my hometown. And I know Noah has moved on, but his fingerprints are all over Workspace ONE.
Yeah. So this is where with Brian's presentation, I said that it's mostly about neutral concepts, and one of the things that he mentioned is, hey, we have our Windows physical and our web apps and our mobile apps and our mobile devices and everything, and it's like the virtual desktops are like 5% of it. And as a person who's been involved in like mobile and all that other stuff, I'm like right on. But also, I don't want to say that like too loudly because I don't want to seem too at odds with our traditional many years long audience of in the desktop virtualization space.
Well, so and that's another question people ask me now. When your hair gets as gray as mine, Jack, they'll start asking you these questions. And so, Kevin, what do you think? Do I still have a job now that WVD is out? And these would be Citrix experts that either run their own or work for a vendor or work for a reseller.
And let me guess the answer. The answer is, without a doubt, yes, of course, for a long time.
Yeah, and part of the reason, Rye, is WVD is immature, right? It's not even shipping yet, and we're talking about it like it's the number one product, but it's immature, it's going to have its issues, and we're going to need experts to go in there and figure out how to make it work, because your boss is going to read about it on a Delta In-Flight magazine and decide to implement.
Delta In-Flight magazine is covering desktop virtualization.
I tell you, if Microsoft wants to spend a couple of dollars and buy a, hey, we almost did it at FS Logix. We could have got on that United podcast if we wanted to.
I wonder what their CPM rates are. Tech Target's next competition.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, he reads a trade magazine. Oh wait, we don't have magazines anymore either. All right, he sees a tweet and says, oh, yeah, we got to implement this. The people in this industry will have to be doing that. But back to Workspace ONE just for a second. They have the product. It was called Cloud Volumes. Now, App Volumes, is that still the name of it?
Yeah.
That doesn't work on physical yet. So maybe we'll see that product evolve at VMware to work on physical. And then I think they filled all the bases, right? They got your mobile devices. They got your virtual desktops. They're just missing getting apps out to your physical desktops.
In terms of Windows 10 modern management, they have they combine the MDM with the stuff that builds on top of that, and of course Windows apps. I mean, we have MSIX now, and that's kind of going to be its ongoing. The ongoing challenge, and of course their ambition right now is they're building up Workspace ONE for Windows 10, and the ambition is essentially to take as many of those SCCM laptop workloads as possible, and they want all of them. They have it's called Airlift. It's like a connector that you plug in, part of it gets plugged into SCCM and can Hoover out all the settings and everything.
Yeah, and the vendor that's going to win here is going to, and it isn't going to be based on name, otherwise they all win, aren't they all called Workspace? But the vendor that's going to win here is the one that's going to make that IT person's job simple as possible. What I've seen in the industry, and you know, I have such a small company, and I had to go out and meet all those customers, and you just don't have the expertise in IT that you used to have. That guy's job is now where you might have had three people working on your remote desktops. It's part of one person right now, right? The other two people have been moved on to other departments or moved on as they became.
You're good.
Sorry about that.
Just bumped the microphone filter, but.
Yeah, talking with his hands. Yeah, so what's happened is they became more Citrix experts and ended up with three letters after their name. They left that company they were working for and went to work for a reseller or went to work for a vendor such as FSLogix. We hired guys out of companies like that. So it's got to be simple. The one that's going to be so things like Airlift are going to be the key to getting you to do it. And one-stop shops are going to be the answer.
Well, and so for the desktop of the future, what do you think of this idea that as Windows 10 modern management evolves, what's happening is that Windows 10 is gaining more and more of the management characteristics. Sorry, of a mobile device, meaning that it becomes much more stateless. It's easy to manage over the air. There's no imaging. Like in Macs, for example, imaging is pretty much all but dead. Instead, they do, well, it's not quite zero touch, but across all of devices, the idea is no more imaging devices. They come from the factory. You power them on, and all their configurations are delivered down to them. And so we'll say in this hypothetical future world, which we've been talking about for a long time, ever since the Windows 8.1 days when Windows first got MDM capabilities. But we realized that, like, back then the MDM wasn't so great at touching the, you know, all the traditional Windows apps. Anyway, so for quite some time, our future vision of Windows endpoints and Windows apps is that the laptops and devices themselves behave much more like mobile devices, and then the more complicated and or legacy Windows applications, maybe those are delivered as published apps from from WVD or from wherever.
So ideally, I open up my device, I open up the lid on my device, and what I would like to see is there's all my apps listed, and maybe there's a store where I can go to and get the ones I'm qualified for. But when I click on them, I don't really care if they're remote or local or SaaS or whatever. That was the original concept behind Horizon, but it was SaaS only, and then it grew. I loved it, and I think the users would love that too. Do you really? Yes, you get in this situation where you have to be always on, but do I really care where it's running from? I know Windows 10S thought it was going to do something like that as well, but that's not the answer, and I think you've beaten that one. That's to death. But the idea is you go and you get your app, and either it's in the menu or it's in a it's on the desktop, and you double click on it. You don't really care where it runs from.
Yeah, exactly. And if we get into some of the cooler stuff, like we're thinking, hey, what if what if, okay, you're on, maybe it's an app, and in some situations you get to use the local web app or the local fat client, but in other situations, like if there's some sort of security threat perceived about your situation, maybe you're in a geolocation where you've never been before, or your operating system hasn't been patched yet or something, then the decision is dynamically made, like, okay, now you're going to get the remote version of that app.
Yeah, because for a variety of reasons, you failed one or more tests. Yeah, and that is that's a lot of work underneath the scenes too. And you know, again, one of the reasons I hate remote desktops is, and I'm old enough to have been there. I remember meeting Mark Templeton when he was product marketing manager. So I just dated myself, people. He retired 4 or 5 years ago now. So this is how they described it. You install Citrix once, and then we install an app in the, it was called Back Office back then. You install the app in the back office, and immediately everybody has it. And I was like, oh, this is so fantastic, because at the time, Lotus Notes was like 11 diskettes. And try installing 11 diskettes on every endpoint, and you're talking it's going to take forever. You install Citrix once, and then all of a sudden you've got all these applications out there. That, now fast forward to today, it's, you know, I don't, you click on a link to install Adobe right now, and it's evergreen, and then it comes in and it updates itself. Sure, I may want to delay those updates till I can test them in the lab. Same is true with, and now, gosh, when you got a copy of XP, or, you know, you had Windows 3.1 or whatever, you never knew when the next version was coming out, you know? Or when you're using, you know, RDSH, you can plan on 3-year updates. Now you got consistent 6-month cadence for your Windows 10. All of a sudden, that endpoint running physical, running the application locally, it's starting to look a little exciting to me again, you know? Why not? All right. I know you got to have the situations where you can't have any data at rest on that endpoint and stuff like that, or it's in a geo that doesn't, you know, fit with your requirements security wise. But otherwise, it's pretty easy to get the applications down to those endpoints now with what's going on. I see the remote desktops going, I don't see them going from 8%, or Brian said 5%. I don't see them going from there to 20 anytime soon.
Well, so consider this idea. If we're taking our thesis that thanks to all of the very important work that people have done to making the remote desktop horse run faster, we're operating the assumption that today remote desktops are faster, easier, and cheaper than they used to be. Correct. And if they're available in the cloud, and, you know, assuming that the license and purchasing and pricing models is appropriate, that you could have a published app or a desktop, and if you need to use it for an hour once a quarter, then that's all you pay for, and it should be pretty easy, you know, just to provision. That's a safe assumption that that's the world that we all have in mind for the future of remote desktops. Correct.
I would say that should be the direction it should go. Yes, exactly. Here's one.
Go ahead, ask your question, and then I'll complain. So in that world, imagine you're the desktop admin in a company, and for years now, people have been bugging you about, you know, you want to use a MacBook, and MacBooks are they're actually. I mean, we were talking about MacBooks and BYO MacBooks 10 years ago, but now they're we're really at a wave of increased adoption in the enterprise. For evidence, just go and look at like IBM's groundbreaking program with Jamf, and Jamf is the Mac management vendor that just a month or two ago, they announced they're up to 20,000 customers. Well, a year ago, that was like 11 or 12,000. And a year before that, that was like 5 or 6,000. And a year before that, it was, you know, just a handful of thousand. So they've the exact numbers, I mean, you can look them up. But basically, they've just doubled every year for the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. So Macs in the enterprise are real, and Chromebooks. Just look at Brian the person's post on how much he loves Chromebooks now.
Okay, so
wait. So
more complaints coming, folks.
Okay, I gave you a notebook to write down all your complaints while I'm going on, and I have my laptop in front of me too, so I can do the same thing while Kevin is speaking. But in that world, so imagine a world where your users, they want to have device choice, but they have like the one accounting app that they need to use 1 week a quarter or an hour a quarter to close the books for the quarter. And before, you know, you could say like, hey, you could virtualize that application, and then suddenly you can enable the device to be independent, because everything else is either on the web or Office, which is fine on Mac OS anyway. Chances are, in the past, we're gonna set up a whole a whole RDS environment or a whole VDI environment just so that you can use your extra fancy aluminum MacBook. Like, go take a hike. We have better things to do. But imagine a world now where it's like, well, you know, there's some other advantages to the Macs, like the there are some studies out there by IBM that says the TCO is lower and they have higher resale value, and you'll make your employees happy. And hey, we can publish this app in WVD, which, since we're already licensed for Microsoft 365 or Office 365, we don't have to pay for the broker. The broker is free. We're just paying for the VM that's running this app for, a couple hours a quarter. Then it's like, sure, go out and use, like, we'll do that. We'll enable device choice. And what proportion of use cases do you think that could be? That could be, maybe that's another, 20, 10, 20, 30, 50% of users that really only, like a lot of your typical Office users probably really only come to situations where they really need the Windows version of an app, a couple times a week, or a couple times a quarter, or a couple times a year. So that's why I think, like, if it's that easy and cheap and free, I'm making air quotes around all this, that like maybe the total number of people that touch virtualized apps could increase dramatically.
So you are correct. And I will say that virtual desktops have been future-proofed. And part of the reason why is exactly what you said. As our Windows usage declines of certain applications, why would I spend the CPU and hardware and all of those things dedicated to that particular application? So they're always, and the cloud is just the most logical place for all of those to end up. But if I may complain. And by the way, all right, quick aside, people, all right. So entrepreneurs, really, when they're complaining, I've heard people say, oh, when I worked for people, quit complaining. And I would say, I'm not complaining, I'm making observations.
Okay. I like that. Like, I'm making the observation that this line is long and it's raining outside.
Yes. I'm just making the observation here. But here is, again, my problem with this. Take my phone, and people are worried about RDSH 2019 not supporting Office 365. That might have crushed some of the people I know that are using it if it didn't end up for the fact that the iPhone now has suitable apps to get your mail and use your OneDrive and all of those items, that collaboration that you might need in sharing documents and stuff like that. So it's going to be a hybrid solution. And that... Well, is the point, the one quick point is there is a device that's best suitable for the application, and pretending that it's always going to be a remote desktop is probably a mistake.
Right. So we'll see. And this is like more along the lines of analysts out of Andreessen Horowitz. I don't know if you've heard the name Benedict Evans. So he's not an analyst in the EUC space. He's the overall tech space. But it's imagine like a job that at one point you needed Excel, and you're going to take Excel and take all this data that came out of your database and then make it into like slides in PowerPoint and then email or share those slides with everybody. Well, the future version of that is you just have like a real-time SaaS dashboard that it has, you know, a web client and an iPad client for when you want to show people in meetings, and it has a mobile client for when you want alerts. So how many of those, and that in the old model, that's very much, I'm sitting at my desktop with a mouse and a big screen and manipulating Excel and PowerPoint, and that becomes completely different when it's like watching for notifications from a SaaS dashboard that maybe there's some like AI that's hooked into your ERP system that says like, hey, you need to make more widgets in this factory to meet your number.
So I'll give you a real life example for that. That was at FS Logic. So typically when people, I think, are even our Bri Forum thing said, FS Logic's founded by industry experts, Kevin Goodman and Randy Cook. There are actually four co-founders of FS Logic. The other two gentlemen, Jeremy and Brian, spent time at Domo. And if you're not familiar with Domo, it does all the things you just suggested. So when they came on board, they were looking at, we had branded, would download the comma-separated variable data from Salesforce and then run some Excel macros on it and then produce reports for our sales funnel and then take it from there and then produce slides for me to go into the board report. Right.
That sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, especially when I think it was Brian that went, hi, I got an idea. We're going to get Domo and you're going to click this button. And it's and that freed
and this
up,
is Brian.
Brian Mann.
Right.
Brian Mann from FS Logix. He and Jeremy Huron are Kevin and Randy might have been the face, but Brian and Jeremy were the brains of this organization. The two real and the guys that wrote all the code and everything else like that, and did other things like say, Brandon, I can free up your brain power to you. You're so smart. We're going to use you for other cool things other than this labor of putting together Kevin's board report. But yeah, so those things are out there. But I mean, and you're still going to future-proof virtual desktops. There's always going to be one Windows app that you have to have out there. Here's my problem with them, though, and somebody else solved this. I'm retired now. Remember? Is the feature lag. This is my other observation, right? So you just talk about the 5 years of innovations that took place from when we started to now. Some of those innovations are on my phone, Face ID. And I have Face ID turned on for my Outlook, okay? So my Outlook is capable of doing that. You tell me when WVD is gonna support that. You know, it's gonna be a while.
Where in WVD is we can envision a world where you Face ID into the company portal app or you Face ID into the Workspace ONE or Workspace app or you Face ID into the WVD client and then you get into the app and then the question is like, how does your identity provider pass your identity into the app that's inside of WVD?
It has to be figured out, and there are smart people who will figure it out, but they'll do it at some point in time after it gets introduced on a physical desktop. That's the point I'm trying to make. Take a look, something as simple as graphics. We've had GPUs now and laptops for ages, and it took the NVIDIA guys a period of time to figure out how to virtualize it and divvy it up per user session so Citrix could use GPUs in an efficient manner. And it works just fine, but there was a lag between when it first was seen on physical desktops to when it, heck, you don't believe me, go out and talk to our good friend Benny Tritch, whose company makes a mint, corporations hire him all the time to analyze user experience with GPUs when they're evaluating virtual desktops and stuff like that. It's needed. It lags.
So there's So there's still a lot of work for buggy whip makers and harness makers and horseshoe the person that pounds the horseshoes the nails something like that.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Yes, there is. So, and a rising tide lifts all vendors, right? So all of a sudden we're talking about virtual desktops. And I tell you right now, there's guys at Microsoft that have told me that now they have quota based on Azure consumption, and Azure consumption is Azure consumption. So they want your virtual desktops up in Azure so they can make their quotas and make their numbers and stuff like that. So
Or they want your application that you may be accessing the web app or the mobile app. It's running, doing all its back end compute in Azure.
Yeah, and so what that means is now your Microsoft, your trusted Microsoft advisor, is now going to be pressing you to move your workloads up into Azure. Because now they have a product, Microsoft, that they can stand behind, WVD, whereas before he had to palm you off on a third party, which he wasn't quite sure if it was going to work or not. Now he's got a throat to choke. And some of those throats are FSLogix people and the group that they work in there. And what you're going to find is there's going to be a lag between the features that physical desktop users need to what is supported up in the cloud, and that gap and how fast they work is it means how quick to close that gap. So they're going to have to work forever.
If you're spending 95% of your time on, you know, take my use case of the user that they need one specific Windows app 1 week a quarter to close the books, and the rest of the time they're, you know, their web apps on their MacBook. Do they care that app that they use once a quarter doesn't have Cortana integration and Ink support?
Good point. That's true. But when you're talking about an even smaller subset of that 8% now, I give you an example for that as well. When I worked for VMware, I had my virtual desktop, and I would log into that because that was the only way to get to the printers at VMware, because my laptop itself hadn't joined the domain yet because it was a Mac, and that was the only way to take advantage of certain resources.
Well, Mac management has come a long way.
Yeah, so we were talking 2010, yeah. This was. Yeah, so, that's not going to move the needle for Azure consumption. Kevin Goodman printing off his Delta boarding pass when he was out in Palo Alto is... Heck, you don't even print out boarding passes anymore. I mean, you know, yeah. But still, you know what I mean.
But I guess the question is, so we saw the figure that that came out of Ignite last year that RDS related workloads were like 10% of all compute hours in Azure, which that was like I thought like, wow, desktop virtualization like registers that much on the,
you know, and I can imagine some, you know, of those uses. Yeah,
when Satya is sitting there looking at like the console that shows how much Azure is being used, something feels like, wow, desktop virtualization has really made it if it's like big enough that, you know, it shows up at like the 10% of the pie chart that he sees.
It gives that virtual desktop group a lot of power to make moves. It also puts a lot of pressure on them to deliver, right? Because that number, you and I were talking about this offline. At one point, I'd heard a number that like 4 million monthly active users using RDSH in Azure, growing at a significant number. I forget what it was. You don't want those people going elsewhere. That just tells you that for whatever reason, people couldn't afford to use Citrix or couldn't, or decided to go roll their own for a whole But you don't get that to 80 million without Microsoft's full faith and credit. These people were rolling their own on that, right? That wasn't
right.
You just signed up for Azure, created a VM, and turned on RDSH.
But what are I think the question of course Microsoft would love for all of those virtual desktop workloads as possible to be on Azure. But how many new workloads are there really? One category of new workloads that I was talking about was you use a Windows app on Azure once a month or once a quarter so that you can don't have to have a Windows on the endpoint anymore. So that's not that many additional. That may be more people are using it, but that's not that many additional hours of usage.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the other that I can think of is, and when I talk to people about case studies, the other big DAS case study that comes up is workstations for CAD and graphics and stuff, because that's you convert the 5 or 10 or 15 thousand dollar CapEx of a workstation to OpEx, especially if it's you're a visual effects studio and you're bursting because you got a contract to work on the animation for the next Marvel movie. So that's probably a big increase of usage hours.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, we can look at the use cases in which it's always going to be appropriate, and the fixed break scenario where now it's up in Microsoft's cloud rather than remotely often in some, you know, location that's maybe not even the U.S. and I can't get a guy out there to look at his laptop. You also have the scenario where it's going to be very enticing now with Windows 7 to get people to move off, because Windows 7 workloads are now going to be supported beyond the regular end of security update schedule. So you're going to have a lot of people migrating over there, no doubt. And it is what I say, future-proofed, because the less and less you use Windows, the less you want to own a copy of Windows to do it on. You'd rather rent it.
Right. I think we have an article about that. You know, after 15 years of the blog, we have an article about most of these concepts.
Well,
that
as you
go forward, you get less and less out of all the work that it takes to manage a physical Windows laptop. Although having said that, with modern management, managing a Windows laptop looks a lot more like managing any other device.
Yeah, so, I mean, what's old is new again. Everything now that all of a sudden you have some people who are talking about virtual desktops who didn't know they existed before Tuesday of last week.
Yeah, that's been fun.
Everyone in this industry, we could poll them. They already know the trouble that the WVD is going to get into, and the experts in our industry right here also know how to solve a lot of those problems.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of job security for all of us. That reminds me of this is a slight digression, but if you've been following and for listeners, people listening to the podcast, hopefully you're reading all the BrianMadden.com articles, so you saw the news about both Microsoft and Google are getting into essentially VDI for games. And, you know, they're making all of the same desktop virtualization arguments. You know, there's no need. And my co-writer here at BrianMadden.com, Kyle Johnson, he's into gaming. So he knows all these pains firsthand of like downloading a game, it's, you know, gigs and gigs, and then like the day that it's released, there's another giant patch that you have to wait to install, and you know, resuming state on different platforms. And so Google and Microsoft are both going into this, and I wrote a couple weeks ago, like, they're going to relearn a lot of the lessons of the desktop virtualization space over again that we already know, and we could teach them these lessons. And the demos that they do, like, it's like I have a really long mouse and monitor keyboard and my computer is on the internet, and it's like it's remote desktop demos from 20 years ago, and for people that hadn't heard of it before, it still gets them pretty excited. The funniest thing, so I'm like, okay, they're going to be relearning a lot of lessons. The first one I came to my attention this week, and it's like, well, Microsoft is working on, when you have a game that's designed for a console with a physical controller with a joystick and buttons and everything, but the client device that you're using it for is now a mobile device, okay, well, now you have to figure out, like, how to adapt the controls. And by the way, also make sure that, like, the game is going to have much shorter sessions, because maybe you play it for 5 minutes while you're waiting for your food, instead of for 45 minutes while you're at home sitting in front of your console. So you have to, like, you know, adapt it for that too.
And it's charged differently, even maybe. Yeah.
These are the exact things. Remember, talking about all these things when we were big on app transformation for a while. Remember these companies? They take, like, okay, you have your virtualized Windows app, and we're going to put a mobile UI in front of it and decide which buttons to map with which features.
So that, yes, yes, and the problem with our industry, I believe, is we have so many people on the far right side of the bell curve as far as IQ goes that they can figure out these solutions. I mean, think about the original Citrix. Over in Linux, KVM, we denigrate it by calling it keyboard, video, and mouse, right? So we virtualized the keyboard, the video, and the mouse. Then it was the storage. Then it was the graphics controller. Now it's peripherals like game controllers. That when I was there at VMware, we were virtualizing USB, you know, and webcams and thumb drives. And back then, that's how you updated your BlackBerry, by hooking it in, the USB and stuff like that.
Well, and now I think it was the Citrix virtual apps and desktops, it's like, now, okay, so we're having new support for the Windows Ink APIs.
Right, yeah, so it's always going to be something, yeah, and it's going to keep people in work for a long, long time until somebody comes and disrupts the industry with something completely different that solves the problems that they're having, the complaints that I came up with, or the observations that I made. That's who's going to disrupt this industry, is someone who doesn't go into it and say, how do I make the remote desktop horse faster?
Well, aren't SaaS apps and Chromebooks and iPads and identity management already doing that?
Slowly ticking away, but it's amazing. The Windows apps are, what's the Brian Madden mantra? There's going to be cockroaches and Twinkies and Windows apps. Hasn't happened yet, and I'm wondering when it's going to happen. And meanwhile, the guys who are creating Windows 10 and the next version of Windows 10, I actually don't see them giving up anytime soon, you know, and saying, oh, you're right, nothing but SaaS apps.
Well, yeah, and it's always going to be, you know, that there's, you know, for desktop operating systems, there's, you know, we have Mac, we have Chrome OS, we have Windows, and I don't doubt that, you know, we'll always have Windows on the endpoint, of course. It's just that it's going to much more resemble a mobile operating system in terms of how it's managed and more stateless.
Okay, I agree. No argument there. I don't think it'll ever get replaced. And therefore, as long as we have a physical Windows, we'll have a remote desktop version of it.
Yeah, yeah. And the apps will be here forever, no matter what.
Well, there's some apps that just the rich UI just never, I just don't see it getting repeated anywhere else. I've used the online versions of Office, and they're okay. They just don't match the productivity that I gain by having it local.
But there are native local clients for Mac and Android and iOS.
And Mark Templeton said it best when he said it. Some data you want to snack on, some data you want to, you know, eat a whole meal on, or you want to be the chef and cook it, and your device dictates where you're going to be. Yeah, I'm never creating a spreadsheet on my iPad. It's just not the right device for the job. But, I'll look at them there. I gave the pitch to Brian. Everyone knows this. Brian did a blog about it. He was one of the investors in FSLogix. He's a player. And I gave him the presentation on an iPad. And I was doing a remote desktop version of PowerPoint because Microsoft hadn't produced those versions yet. And everything else that was a PowerPoint player on the iPad was crap, in my opinion. So I actually remoted into my desktop to into my RDSH so I could give him that presentation.
And when you need to use PowerPoint on the iPad now, what do you do?
I use the Office 365 version of PowerPoint that came. Yeah. I still don't create presentations on that iPad, though. It's just not the right device to award. I use a Mac now to do that. So
yeah,
and
yeah.
I have the same Office 365 on the Mac now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so there are a lot of ways that we can slice and dice this conversation. We're at about an hour and 15 minutes, which is fine for the podcast because we can go as long as we want. But as we wrap up and put a bow on that conversation, now that you've so the interesting thing is that you've been spending the last 5 years plus the time when FSLogix was in stealth, obviously very closely focused on that. When you get to emerge like blinking into the light and see all these different spaces that you may not have been able to pay, spend as much time watching. As you've had some more time to look at all these new things, what's most interesting or notable right now across, anything in our space?
A couple of things. Let's give categories we can dive into. We want security is going to become more and more important as it goes through, and securing your data, and nobody wanted to be that poor gentleman who left his laptop on the train in Washington D.C., which had all of the Social Security numbers on it for several of our veterans. My brother, one of the workers at FSLogix, gets security check stuff for life because of that on there. Nobody wants to be that guy. But now nobody wants to be that guy that let that PowerPoint loose. The offenses are fireable now for far less tolerant than that. And it doesn't even have to be a WannaCry. It could just be, personal prediction. I don't know anybody there. I haven't talked to anybody. I've just been reading about it. You probably know more about it. Somebody's head is rolling at Citrix for that data breach that took place. I don't know who that person is or if they were actually responsible, but somebody has to go, and I don't know who that person is, but that is a fireable, punishable offense. And I believe we'll see security, keep rising to the forefront as part of that as well.
There we go. And there's, we were talking offline before the show about all of this stuff that's going on in identity right now. And we were talking about, the tokenization of our data and concepts like self-sovereign identity and identity providers. And there's a lot of fun stuff in there to check out.
Yeah, so think about it generically, right? There's a public Jack Madden and then there's a private Jack Madden, right? And I should be able to allow the public to see what I want them to see, and everything else should be private. We were talking about the show about this. I shouldn't have to show my license, which has my address on it, my home address. I'm doxing myself every time I prove I'm old enough to have a drink in a bar. You know, I shouldn't have to do that. I should be able to, you know, I have Face ID'd with my phone, and my phone now registers just like Apple Pay says, I'm legal to drink alcohol in your state, you know.
Right, right. And there's the, I don't even need to know your birthday. All I need to know is that you're over 21. And so really that's a yes, no thing. So the tokenization of our personal data and the limiting the scope of access for the appropriate rules, or for the appropriate roles. That stuff gets even more exciting, especially as businesses becoming, you know, have to be doing more sharing of data and identities. You know, if I'm a contractor and working in multiple places, then how is my identity managed? And, you know, if I'm in if I'm a contractor and doing work for company A and company B, and then company A and B are working together, do their records in each system match up, or do I have some sort of self-sovereign identity that I'm federating to both of those companies and I'm giving them the scope to know about me what they need to know?
Yeah, and wouldn't you like to be in control of that? You know, think of, and let's just use like, for example, Apple Pay. All right. Compared to the old way, I used to hand you my credit card and you'd disappear with it for a while. It still happens at some restaurants, right? You're gone with my number and my security code, so you can do online transactions for a period of time. And you also see my signature on the back. Compare with Apple Pay, where I just touch it. And Apple, the contract Apple has made with you is you are going to get remunerated for these goods or services, and none of your business on how.
And what the credit card number is.
Yeah, and you don't see the credit card number. You don't see my little security code on that. Imagine if you did that with your identification with everything else. You talked about being a contractor. Okay, I'm going to Apple Pay my way into your payroll system. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you my social security number or my birth date or my mother's maiden name or the fact my dog's name is Fluffy. I'm just going to, use a term for that. I'm going to go and it's going to be opaque for you. And I'd like to do that with just like every transaction I made on the web.
So just right now, the web auth-in was standard, was ratified. And so next week, I'm going to be at Okta's conference, and the week after Google Cloud Identity or Google Cloud Next, which there's a lot of identity content there because, you know, they're running, Google has a lot of identities, and, you know, I use my Google identity to sign into a lot of services. So that's super interesting. But the other pitch that I'll make to you, Kevin, is that in the end of June, it used to be called the Cloud Identity Summit. It's now called Identiverse. If this is a topic that anybody wants to go and hear super smart people talk about, Identiverse is the conference where that happens. I think it's last week in June. And you can see vendors that are working on these problems. It's put on by Ping Identity, but it's fairly neutral.
So stay tuned, folks. Maybe we'll make a report on it when we come back. Yeah, I will see you there for sure.
Cool. Well, so with that, we're at about an hour and 20 minutes, but so everybody, thank you very much for listening as we talk through all these future end-user computing use cases and whether or not WVD is a faster horse. Kevin, thank you so much for coming out to San Francisco to record the podcast.
Jack, always a pleasure. You know that. Looking forward to dinner tonight.
All right. And thank you, everybody, for listening.